You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Hey people, how are you doing? Welcome to episode 189 of the Sports Therapy Association podcast. My name is Matt Phillips, creator of runchatlive.com. And as always, this episode is being recorded live on a Tuesday, 8 o'clock, on the Sports Therapy Association YouTube channel, Sports Therapy Association Facebook page, and the Sports Therapy Association Open Group. So if you are listening to the podcast, thank you very much for listening. But if you would like to join us live and have a chance to ask our guests questions directly and hang out with other people who join us live, then all you've got to do is go along on a Tuesday at 8 o'clock to one of those sources, and you can do so. In this episode, 189, entitled Move Mojo, Fitness for Individuals with Disabilities, my special guest is Robert Francis, who has 8 years experience working in Olympic and Paralympic disciplines. He's going to be discussing his new project, Move Mojo, which is an inclusive physical activity program that creates accessibility and enjoyment for everyone, regardless of their ability. Robert is on a mission to redefine the perception of disability through the power of movement. So stay tuned to hear how soft tissue therapists in particular can help create a world in which the opportunity to move is a human right. That's not my words. That's quoted from the website. But it gives you an idea of the passion. I'm so excited about this episode. I have been for ages. And I know I say that about all our guests, but it's such a great topic, which we've touched on before. And we really are lucky to have a guy of Robert's experience and passion with us tonight. But first of all, last week in episode 188 of the Sports Therapy Association, we concluded our three-part series of how to set up a massage therapy business, in which our panel of experienced sports massage therapists and sports therapists gave some fantastic tips on both setting up as a mobile therapist and also doing event work. As I posted the other day or yesterday, because of some technical difficulties that are being investigated, I think I've just received notification that they are sorted, but it's not actually available as a podcast yet, but it is on YouTube. And by the time you hear this podcast, it should be available. I've just got to check the audio that's being downloaded properly for me, and then I can upload this podcast. A huge thank you to the panel who took part in that episode. It was Carla Bickerstaff of Sports Massage by Carla, Hannah Tabram of Hannah Tabram Sports Massage, Katie Evans of Moodwell Soft Tissue Therapy, and Chloe Reynolds of CR Sports Massage. All links to those people and the information and the show notes is all available. Well, it will be once I manage to upload it. But yeah, you can find it all, I think, on YouTube as well, if you go to YouTube. By the way, if you are watching tonight via the Facebook Open Group and you'd like to ask a question or leave a comment, then because you're in the Facebook group, you're going to need to click on the link in the post comments, which I will bring up on the screen now. It's just you only have to do it once in your lives. And all it is you need to give Facebook your permission to post basically your photo so people can see you. And I do recommend you do it because part of hanging out and joining us live is networking, so people can see your logo. People can be attracted to it and then network and kind of find out more about you, especially if you're in the same location in the UK. So basically, you just need to go to b.live/comments-issue. So that's b.live/comments-issue. Not important if you listen to the podcast, but if you are joining us live, then you need to do that once if you come from a Facebook group. Right then, back to this episode of the Sports Therapy Association podcast, episode 189, Move Mojo, Fitness for Individuals with Disabilities, with my special guest, Robert Francis, who I shall bring up right now.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me today. And thanks for the introduction.
That's okay. No, I'm really excited. As I said, I'm excited about all guests and I love my job and I love having the chance to speak to people. But I'm sure you understand, you feel particularly privileged to work in with the people you do, because it's an area of our society who are marginalized and they need people to have a bit of passion and time. So I'm really pleasure to spend time with you and hear all about it. And where are you in the world? Where are you sitting at the moment?
I am in the tropical paradise of Birmingham. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Our international listeners are now thinking, wow, the tropics in the UK. But yeah, it's absolute paradise. It's not the end of the world, but you can see it if you look out the window with the binoculars. Fantastic. That's great. So thanks, like I said, for coming on the show. People in the live lounge who have joined us, if you have got questions, I'm just going to say hi to a few of you who joined to recognize your presence. So Sarah Jones is here. Hey, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. Glenn Murphy is here. He said, hi, all. And Gary Benson, who's the founder of the STA, is here as well, saying, even you're all looking forward to this one, aren't we all? And like I say, if you are in the live lounge, do feel free to ask questions. It's a great opportunity to learn from somebody who's got massive experience working in this field. So there we go. Right. So it's an exciting time for you, yeah, Rob? You just managed to launch it literally, was it like a week ago or something, the website went live?
Sure, yeah. So like all startup founders, spinning multiple plates, putting out constant fires. So yeah, the last 2 weeks have been pretty much full-time into it. I've had a proof of concept for 2 years and really kind of strategized to build out like such things like the business plan, the actual curriculum, what our offering is. So I've been delivering for 2 years around full-time work, and then made the leap from the frying pan into the fire 2 weeks ago. So launched a website 2 weeks ago, and yeah, full-time startup founder. Yeah, it's going really well, really well, really excited. And it's incredibly busy time these last 2 weeks have been.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, isn't it? We've had a few guests on the show who've started up these businesses, which in theory on paper should just be so successful. But it's like any business. You need to get the word out there and you need to kind of help people share what you're doing. And so hopefully this will help with that. And I'll say now for people who have just joined the podcast, just in case you do have to go off and do something else, if you do have an interest in this field, then do please go to movemojo.com. Simple as that, movemojo.com. All the information is there, plus all the links to website, to the social media. If you're an Instagram fan, then it's move.mojo. If you're a Twitter fan, for some reason, then it's move_mojo. And obviously, it's on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. You just look up Move Mojo. Yeah, definitely recommend it. Really exciting time and a real help you can make in with a group of people, like I say, who really need help. So give us a little idea then. I know this is tricky, and I warned you this question was going to come up. Obviously, you've been busy with, you know, launching it, but what is working with this population? What is a typical day for you, Robert?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background was in Olympic and para sport. I finished a project to go into this full time. My last project was with the International Olympic Committee over in the Pacific in a country called Vanuatu. And kind of my background being in professional sport, the life which I'm delivering now is completely in terms of contrast. So what you said, it's adding value to that population, which is so underserved. So in terms of like how my day looks, it's really intrinsically led, especially with the purpose and the mission statements, which you can see all on our website and our values. It's really trying to empower persons with disabilities to really take control of their health through physical activity, ultimately making it inclusive, making it safe, and making it a real fun environment. However, with the same sports medicine, sports science elements as what you'd find in a para program, for example, or what we were delivering for the IOC. So with that same level of expertise, however, very purpose-led, very intrinsically led to actually real deliver, ultimately increase someone's quality of life and also their potential life expectancy too. So it's really changed upon going from more extrinsically, you know, looking at the badge, who I work for, what team, what competitions we're preparing for, more to that greater intrinsically led purpose of actually, we're going to change someone's quality of life and we're going to potentially change the course of someone's life through, you know, empowering them to take control of their health. For example, even just being able to reach down to the floor and pick something up off the floor, or be able to get out the chair or get up the stairs without the assisted need of a carer. For example, those things are so intrinsically led that, you know, my day looks completely different going from extrinsically more high pressured, you know, this competition prep for that organization, et cetera, to literally going out and just changing people's lives through the power movement, really.
It is. It's out. I read your website, like I say, go to Move Mojo, people. And it is a so honest, transparent kind of mission statements you put up there. And they really do hit home, because like you say, you really can change lives with this. Maybe if we could let our listeners know, when we say individuals with disabilities, obviously that is a large range of people, but what, give us some examples of what disabilities you work with. Individuals.
Sure, absolutely. So we use the term disabilities because we don't really want to exclude. So we work with all ranges of disabilities that might be physical, for example. At the minute, we have a massive SEND population, so special educational needs, which could involve like speech impairment, visual impairment, for example, as well as like autism, for example, somewhere on that spectrum. Those within community centre special care and those within SEND schools. SEND schools, SEND community centres are the main bulk of our work at the minute in terms of providing inclusive physical activity for those populations. And realistically, with the SEND population, the special educational needs, it's so underserved in terms of what activities are available for them. To be able to go into this, we did lots of different elements of research, including over 100 parents. And we found that programs are so limited that could cater for this population. And the programs that could were very few and far between and not regular. So for this whole demographic, there was nothing regular in terms of physical activity, in terms of how myself and you could just go join the gym, for example. I mean, how daunting is going to the gym anyway? How daunting is it going out for a run? Let alone if you have special educational needs, for example, the dauntingness and how the inequalities are just exacerbate the problem. So we really wanted to kind of provide that service to this demographic. And that's currently what we're working with at the minute within community centres and special educational needs schools.
Fantastic. Why do you think these people are so underserved?
I think from my last 2 years of building this up around working within Parasport is that it requires high levels of communication, high levels of coaching competency, and high levels of experience as a practitioner on how to adapt your exercise hierarchy or adapt your exercise prescription. In terms of what could happen on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, is the adaptions could vary so much just with that one person in front of you. And then additionally with the group, there could be 20 participants within the group, but all 20 have various different needs, various different abilities. You as a practitioner, you have to be able to have those exercise adaptions and that experience to be able to adapt in front of you. But also, I think what's massively key, what I touched on, is kind of the coaching experience and the communication in terms of being able to get that message across. And I think for me, this is more challenging than working in Paralympic level sports and working for the IOC, getting athletes to go and win a medal at the next Olympic Games. Because in terms of where I've really had to work on and continue to work on is my communication skills and is my adaptions. Every day is completely different. Every person is so different as well within those groups. And so it really leans on that other side, which I don't think we're taught on university programs. I don't think we're taught on courses. So it's really an interesting flex for me right now and what I've learned over the last 2 years to pick up those additional skill sets.
It's interesting. We had a little chat before, and we've mentioned this before with people we've had on the show, but it's interesting how the parallels that we can draw from working with people, individuals with learning disabilities, and working with people who have not got diagnosed learning disabilities, in the sense that we should really all be looking as our clients as individuals who need communicating with in different ways, who can change, like you say, from day to day. We should be recognizing and be prepared and have the skills to do this. So it's interesting listening to you and just realizing that, you know, what you're talking about is obviously intensified and more amplified than what can happen, and potentially more dangerous. But it's all skills really that clinicians lack and need just from working with somebody who hasn't necessarily got a learning disability. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a common trend what a lot of S&C coaches say when you're coaching in academy settings with, like, for example, younger age groups, you need the better coaches there, arguably, because you need to have those better communication skills. And then as the athlete moves up the pathway to senior level, you're just putting numbers in a spreadsheet, doing some testing, looking more at the analytical kind of harder skills, so to speak. And I think there's a lot of correlations to draw from that in terms of everyone does need those communication skills. And when you start working with those younger age groups, or you start working with participants or individuals with different disabilities or abilities, so to speak, you really have to, it just opens a can of worms in terms of like, wow, there's so many levels to this communication element. Maybe we should really start looking at these at hard skills, not the softer skills that they're termed as, so to speak. And such as like the data sets, the numbers go completely out the window, and it really opens up a can of worms of how much communication and skills within that we are potentially missing as practitioners.
Definitely. There was a really good post, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Derek Griffin, who's a great physio and pain educator and also a great runner as well with his 222 marathons and things. But he did a post the other day, I think it was on a podcast. Damn, this is going to backfire me. I can't remember the name of the podcast now. It's a new podcast. But anyway, I'll put it on the links. But he was pointing out that traditionally what we refer to as the soft skills should really not be called soft skills, because he says therapists will flock in their thousands to the latest ways to, you know, work with a proximal hamstring tendinopathy or something, their manual therapy techniques. And we regard kind of communication and open-ended questions and that stuff as kind of the soft skills, and like the mood and the lighting. But really now we're realizing that they're not soft skills at all. And this is what actually people lack. And if anything, people have got enough of the kind of rehab protocols and the gold standard and all that. We need more of these soft skills. So that kind of touches very much on what you've just said.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think realistically, going into this further, even from kind of relating to individuals or participants who come onto our sessions, and relating to their care network or other stakeholders such as parents, carers, teachers, really kind of brings out that communication to a whole new level. Just like if a patient was to come into a sports therapy setting, you've got to bear in mind like how you not just communicate with that patient in front of you, but also the network that they have around them. And I think really getting into kind of more of a community health with Move Mojo has really opened me up even more to, we don't just have to communicate with a participant or patient or athlete in front of us. We've also got to learn how to communicate to that wider audience of the other stakeholders in their relationship. And for me, especially on that website, we worked really, really hard on that messaging to really be as open as we can about what we're trying to do. And ultimately within our sessions, that's ultimately what we try and do as well. So in terms of that communication, it's just opened me up to even more learning. And I think it's massively undervalued within the sector.
Fantastic. Great. We should point out, I'm just going to put in the notes here, because I hate saying something and not knowing what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to put in the notes. It was the Modern Pain podcast with Derek Griffin, where he, as well as a lot of other great stuff, he mentions those soft skills. And it's something so important. So if you listen to this podcast, then yeah, that's the one you need to check out if you're interested in that. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to point out that we, a year ago, actually, which that flew by, and we did have a focus, let me put that on the screen so everyone can see it. We did have a special focus back in February 2023, which was where we combined mental health and learning disabilities. And we had the pleasure of having guests such as James Chapman of All About the Mind, who's an instructor at MHFA and Mental Health First Aid. We also had Alistair Bevelian of theldphysio.com, with the LD standing for learning disability. And we also had Ryan Smith and Jack Coward, who are the creators and hosts of Let's Be Frank podcast, which is a mental health awareness podcast giving men a platform and a safe space where they can stand up and speak about their life struggles and mental health challenges. So if you're interested in this topic, then I would recommend that you, as well as checking out Move Mojo, but go back to those three as well, and you'll hear a lot of the stuff being talked about and referred to, including the difference between learning disabilities and learning difficulties, and also mental health as well, which is something I want to chat with you about, Rob, if that's okay. A lot of people get confused, don't they? And this is one of the big problems, I think, and why people with individuals with learning disabilities can feel so marginalized. We don't kind of realize that people with learning disabilities are individuals, and they're actually more likely to have mental health issues, which is even more of a reason to get them in moving and having fun, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think for us as a program, we don't just look at the physical exercise element of it, or the physical activity kind of as just a one singular, you know, silo point of view down at physical activity. We like to think that our program is holistic. Obviously, we are, you know, getting people moving through inclusive physical activity, but the extra benefits of that is an increase in mental health for sure. And I think it's because a lot of these individuals feel very isolated within their communities. There's not a lot in terms of offering. And what we really pride ourselves on, and what I really wanted to develop because of that, was game-based exercise that involved working as a team, working with other individuals, and then also having like a social and a communication element attached to that. So we know the science behind, you know, physical activity, just exercising increases dopamine with the endorphin, so to speak. So you're going to get that positivity out of that. But also just being in a room with others, being able to talk, catch up, share things with, but then work with them, and then also do game-based activities where you're working together as a team. We're not just seeing like physical elements come out of this. We're also seeing positive mental health elements come out of this. We're not psychologists, we're not a psychology program, but in terms of just alluding to more like a holistic model, we're not just seeing wins from that physiological side, it's also from that psychological side of improved mental health, so to speak. And that's really what we're all about, you know, that inclusiveness and that kind of holistic model, because we know that health isn't just a one-dimensional point of view. And especially exercise, if we can combine it with that teamwork, with those communications, with that game-based activity too, we're also going to hit a lot of other elements within that as well.
Excellent. Great information. Don't forget, people who are in the lounge, if you've got any questions for Rob, then do fire away. You're probably down there writing things down on your pads and getting your pencils out. I know what you're like in there. But Chaz Allen has got a comment here. Hi, very interesting. We have similar challenges managing long-term conditions in the community. Definitely. I mean, what we're talking about, I think we apply to lots of people who are marginalized, including the elderly. We can have diagnostic overshadowing with the young as well. We just presume because of their age, whether it's young or old, or the fact that they may have Down syndrome, that what we're seeing is a consequence of that diagnosis. And that's the tragic thing. We miss the symptoms, which if someone else came in, we go straight away, oh, it looks like you might have this going on. You know, it might have something wrong with your knee. And it can have deadly consequences. It can have tragic consequences, as talked about by Alistair and the tragic case of his brother. And even the other day, not to be a downer or anything too much on the show, but I read this and I was nearly sick. I mean, there was a guy with Down syndrome who was in hospital, and somehow his notes said kneel by mouth. And he was given kneel by mouth, and he was complaining, and he was saying he was really hungry in the limited communication he had. And the nurses even said, are you sure this guy's kneel by mouth? And it's like, yeah, he's definitely, don't worry about complaining. And it was classic diagnostic overshadowing. They thought because he had Down syndrome, the fuss he was making and his movements and that was just because of Down's. And it wasn't kneel by mouth at all. They got paperwork mixed up and he died. He had like 6 days without food and it wasn't supposed to be kneel by mouth at all. And it's one of, sadly, many, many situations where people with learning disabilities have died because they've been treated differently rather than going, well, hold on, it's not somebody with Downs, it's an individual who's, yes, got down, but they've got something else going on as well. And it's pretty shocking, not to bring a downer, but I mean, and what you do, Rob, is all about this, isn't it? It's accepting that these are individuals, first of all. It's John, it's Sally, it's Jane. It's not just, oh, another person with Downs or another person with autism. There must be some sad stories. I don't want to dwell on sadness, but because obviously there's happy stories as well. But you must see a lot of people who are neglected and not given opportunities, and then finally they get to you.
Yeah, I think, yeah, wow, just blown away by what that story was, for sure. Yeah, we try and flip that in terms of, yes, there is so much negativity, and we try and flip that to the empowerment. So, for example, like yesterday, I have my Monday group. And I look forward to that all weekend because I go in there and I have the most fun ever. Like, I'm playing games with people who I connect with. You know, at Christmas, we all give each other Christmas cards. For example, on my birthday, we all brought me birthday cake. So, you know, I think we try and flip that, you know, to see obviously everyone as empowered persons who, you know, come to our sessions. And yes, we recognize the challenges, but we see the challenges as something that we can overcome and we can adapt and we can make it as inclusive as we can to really cater for all those different needs. And I think that obviously that negative element kind of started to flip in my mindset to like thinking, what can I do with this hour I have this with this group? And I started playing these different games, really experimenting with different sessions that I could do just after lockdown, where I was trying to develop a proof of concept. And the parents and the carers were coming to me saying they look forward to this session all week. You know, they love you. They love the sessions. They love getting together.
They're just playing with their friends. And this is like the highlight of like most of our participants' week, right? And for something, for me, it was like, oh, I'm just doing game-based activities. I'm just having fun, right? Very structured S&C, but dosed in game-based environments. And then it was almost like, wow, I'm actually creating more cultural and kind of societal change with this. Like, yes, there is so much neglect and negativity. And I've heard stories similar to yours. I heard a terrible story today, talking to someone, but I really try and focus on like what we can do in the here and now, and what can we affect, and what positive change we can do. And that's almost like why we have that philosophy of trying to empower those persons, because it can be done. Like we've demonstrated that it can be done with a proof of concept. Yes, we are launching as a startup, but we have a proof of concept to say that, yes, this can be done and we can affect change positively with this. And yeah, it really struck me from the feedback that we were getting, and just even me as a coach, just looking so forward to turning up on a Monday to be able to just involve and integrate into the group myself, even, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, it is, like you say, it's very much a question of empowering, showing success so that we can educate everybody else. And I think this is where I'm excited for our listeners who, like I say, are essentially either sports therapists or sports rehab specialists or sports massage therapists. And I'm interested for you to give us some tips on, for people who are maybe already working with an individual with a learning disability. I know I'm conscious that I'm saying that it could cover so much. So you can pinpoint it a little bit more if necessary. But what are some tips for, or maybe people who want to get into that because they think, I really want to do this. Maybe they've got a relative or they know somebody thinking, I want to help more of these people. What are some tips that you can advise on when you are working with people with a learning disability?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's treating everyone as an individual, firstly, you know, and then realizing that you can affect a lot of positive change with just adapting what you're probably doing already in almost with general populations, so to speak, but listening, working on that communication element. So really listening and trying to understand what the situation is and what the ability is. And then really adapting, like I said, what you're doing in general practice at the minute, but adapting it. And a big thing which has worked really for us, which I allude to all the time, is making it fun and making it engaging, like turning it into a game, having different challenges within that, for example. So like a squat, right? The NHS use a derivative like a sit to stand, for example. So I looked at the sit to stand and made it more game based. So there's different variations we use. So it could be a sit to stand where they have to then on the stand throw the ball up and be able to score it through the hoop, for example. Or they have to throw the ball up and then knock down the targets, like the, you know, free skittles down at the end, for example. The hinge, the deadlift pattern we do in the chair. So it might be in the chair, just bending down, rolling a ball down the bowling alley to the skittles, for example. And then we might use the chair as a support, and then they might try and bowl, hinge at the hips and bowl the ball down to the skittles. So something which has worked really, really well is looking at kind of general practice like squat, push, pull, hinge, brace, strength and conditioning principles, adapting them. So working out, right, we need these fundamental movements for life. How do we adapt them? Okay, this is how we can adapt them, like using the chair, using different aids, so to speak. And then right now, how do we gamify them? Okay. And now how do we communicate and listen and watch our individuals achieve that? And what are the outcomes of that? And do we need to go back and adapt this even further? Right. So that's an example of how I've done it to get to where I'm at right now. And something which practitioners can do in their own environment is look at kind of general fundamental movements, use aids, adapt them, and then fun, gamify it. And then constant communication, constant observation, and just see if it is actually creating positive change.
Excellent. And you're saying that, and I'm thinking, and again, we chatted briefly about this off air, but in theory, the modern therapist, we know, for example, that one of the biggest problems in exercise prescription is non-compliance, and patients will go away going, thank you very much, here's my money, and they just won't do it. You know, it's a terrible. And hopefully therapists are realizing now that when patients or clients don't do the exercises, you can't just say, oh, well, how do they expect to get better then? You know, they didn't even do the exercises and blame them. we kind of try and turn it around and make the therapist realize if they haven't done it, it's because of me. I haven't either given them something they can feasibly do or given them too much, or maybe I haven't listened to them enough and realized, you know, what the barriers they've got are. So what you're talking about is something that all therapists should really be doing, making things more fun, making something that people are actually going to enjoy.
Sure.
But I'm interested, what do you think in your experience could be some of the fears that therapists have in working with some of this population? What do they fear could go wrong in terms of reactions? And are these fears justified, or is it something that it can be dealt with, you know, on an individual basis if something does go wrong?
Yeah, definitely. I think utilize your network. So obviously there's a whole integrated care board or whole stakeholder network around these populations that we're talking about. So, you know, you can lean on other practitioners to, you know, such as like understanding realistically what the person's condition is, what they can do, what they can't do. You could also look at, like, you know, doctor's notes or physio's notes to actually understand the whole process, speaking with carers, parents around this to really get a full picture, and then speaking and listening to the actual person in front of you to see what they can do, what they can't do. And I think you'd be really surprised about what they know they can do, what they want to do, and what they may struggle with, right? But then you've got that whole network around that person too, which you can really lean on. I know certainly for us, like, you know, communicating with parents who know them best, or carers who know them best, day center staff who care for them constantly. If, for example, they were to go for, you know, they had an injury and they saw a medical professional, we would understand exactly through the day center staff what the professional said, and then we can adapt our session based on that advice around that, so to speak. So, you know, we use that whole network approach of that kind of integrated care around the person, but then also speaking to them, understanding what they can do and what they can't do. And I think that really comes back from my experience within parasport previous to this. When I was with archery, we did a lot on the pathway with kind of people coming through Battle Back or the Help the Heroes program, who'd gone through quite a lot. And really, as a practitioner, you could really, it was really kind of a difference to see how much they can actually do once you ask those open-ended questions and what people felt comfortable to do with a disability. And you'd be really, really surprised with the capabilities that people can have.
Amazing. That's great. And what about people who are worried about working within their scope and maybe insurance? I mean, what do you know about that in terms of who they should contact? Should people contact insurance companies? And Gary, actually, in the Lion Lounge might be able to work on this. But if you are working with someone with a learning disability, does it put your insurance at risk if they're diagnosed with something? What do you know?
Yeah, I couldn't really answer that to be honest. Gary might be the expert there. I know for certainly for us, we're insured as a physical activity provider for people with disabilities or non-disabilities. I know in terms of the qualifications, you know, we've got like postgraduate or degrees within the rehabilitation setting or strength and conditioning. So that might be a factor within it. In terms of the insurance, yeah, we're insured for that. I wouldn't be sure going from, let's say, a sports therapist to that special kind of population, so to speak.
You wait, Gary will have an answer in the comments. If he's still there, then he'll have an answer next time. But it's obviously something you need to check out and definitely not work outside of your scope. But there sounds like there's so much you can do if you just, hey, guess what? The answer is just communicate. You know, talk to the person if they can talk to you back and let you know, or talk to people who come with them. Very similar in ways to working with children in some respect. You know, we don't alienate children just because they haven't got the experience or the ability to voice what they want because they're 6 or 7 years old, and we don't turn them away. But so why do we just turn away somebody who's, you know, hasn't got the ability to talk like an adult just because, you know, of a learning disability? So fine. Right. Where are we? We've got fantastic 8:37. I've got loads of things I want to ask you. So with regards to Move Mojo, are you going to help educate? Is the plan to help educate other therapists and provide courses and things to share some of your experience?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the way we're going. I think for practitioners out there, there's not a lot on offer around this at all, if there is anything, from what I've done in terms of desktop research. I know I learned these skills working within parasport, coming from other professional sports settings into more like a parasport role. And then during COVID, then coming to work with SEN populations through COVID. And I've really kind of picked up these traits over the last 2 years, developed the curriculum, developed the skills from that, from parasport experience, and then doing this for two years. But there isn't really any qualifications or any learning through that. It was more self-learning through experience, but then also being in an NGB that had a para program to learn off para coaches or other people within that parasport setting who had years of experience within parasport. But there is nothing out there in terms of qualifying or giving anyone CPD to do this, let alone gamifying exercise or communicating sessions or communicating exercises. You know, really interesting one as well, like when we look at communicating, it's not necessarily always through kind of our voice. We can kind of communicate those different elements through like constraints-based approaches by, you know, just changing the sessions or using some different colors or giving a different cue, for example. There's so much scope that we see in terms of learning opportunities. So we are definitely looking at putting courses on to really educate practitioners on everything that I've developed to really give back and be able to further kind of this mission to just get the world moving more, so to speak.
Amazing. Sounds good. And obviously we'll keep members updated, STA members, of any courses that are coming up. And I imagine if people are interested in, then they can. Is there a newsletter or anything you're doing yet? Well, they can definitely go to your website, can't they? Is there someone they can sign up for information about these things? Or is it?
Yeah, definitely. So we've got a monthly newsletter, which will come out, start rolling from the end of March. It'll come out every March. If they just go on to website, press inquire now, it'll direct to a type form. Just drop the details into the type form, and then you'll be able to subscribe to our monthly newsletter.
Excellent. Right. So yes, Move Mojo. I just got to check. Yeah, it is a movemojo.com. Of course it is. If you're listening to the podcast, you can't see these screenshots here, but I'm just going to bring it up. People who are in the live lounge have joined us live on YouTube and Facebook. Let's just make that a little bit bigger. So yeah, movemojo.com. There's loads of information on there. I mean, it enthuses you straight away. It's inspiring. And there's videos on there. There's, like I say, details of all the philosophies and mission statements. And also some really interesting facts. I want to bring one of the pages up that I saved here and have you talk us through it. It just so simply talks about the difference between what you're trying to put forward for people with learning disabilities and what happens in exercise classes. So, I mean, it starts off at the top and then I'll let you describe what's underneath. But it says, no one with a disability should feel excluded from exercising and improving their health. It sounds so obvious, but talk us through how you chose and what you kind of point out underneath there with the difference between exercise classes and Move Mojo.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did a round of market research. So we used an independent researcher. We got 100 parents and then we got 25 participants with SEND, so special educational needs, and realistically heard their views. And we got interview-based focus groups. We also sent out questionnaires. So we got a load of data to really kind of capture some of the pain points which individuals within the community feel about exercise or fitness in general. Like I said, how daunting is it for myself and you to go into the gym? I mean, even now, you know, even myself, it's like sometimes you do feel daunted, don't you? Just turning into a new gym or a new sports club, which you're unaware of, you're joining a new sport. It's a daunting experience. So we really wanted to understand what people were feeling. And then we did market research into understanding the market and what could be offered and what was being offered. And there's really nothing there for anyone with a disability, let alone a special educational needs. So we really wanted to understand what people were going through and really design a purposely built product for them. And that's where we come up with that comparison. It's the Move Mojo, what we're trying to push forwards versus what is traditional exercise or traditional exercise classes that you'd probably see down at your local gym or your local council leisure center, so to speak, versus the movement that we are trying to develop. So we really wanted to listen to people within the community and really develop that product that would really kind of suit their needs and really fit what they were missing. Everyone really understood the importance of physical activity, and it really kind of speaks volumes about what you were saying, where people go to the therapist or the physio and then don't do their exercises when they go. It was like 95% of people completely understood that physical activity was good for them right? However, to be able to achieve that was a completely different story. And I really go back to what I said at the beginning. When we looked at the numbers as well, it was just so limited in terms of what was on offer. And then even if they, you know, even like a, just a general offering down the down your local gym or your local council authority, what was on offer, it was just nothing tailored or specific at all. And it really goes back to your question of why hasn't anyone done it before? And it's something that goes through my head every day, especially now. And I really think it's the fact that I've had to lean on so much of my experience within parasport and then also my S&C career of constantly adapting exercises and then having some really in-depth experience with like NGB, IOC stuff, where I really got to be around the experts in parasport and exercise prescription. And like I said, this is what I'm doing now is more challenging than me working, putting people on the podium at Olympic or Paralympic kind of game, so to speak, because of those different adaptions, those different communication skills and those different coaching abilities. And I think we really wanted to purposely challenge the whole concept of exercise and what is already out there with this new product, so to speak, which can be offered to the community. And it's what the community really, really want.
So like we kind of alluded to before, somebody who went on a course which you provided talk about this communication and how to gamify all this, they're going to be learning lots of skills which will help them with everyday clients as well. It's going to be something they can apply to anybody.
Yeah, so we delivered a course to British Archery on last Monday, and that was at their one of their instructor coaching conferences, and we put coaches through basically how to gamify a warm-up. So a basic ramp principle, raise, activate, mobilize, potentiate, how to gamify it, how to make it fun for different audiences, and then also how to adapt to make it inclusive through constraints-based approaches for different coaching skills. And it was, you know, an afternoon workshop just on warm-ups, for example, let alone how a main session could look like. And there's way more variables in a main session than there is in something like a 10-minute warm-up at the start, right? But we had some really good feedback from archery coaches who came onto that. And we're really looking at delving into other sports to try and help more coaches, but then also from that practitioner element of therapists, those same skill sets could be applied for sure. And it's something that we're looking at launching as well as our delivery towards the end of this year.
That sounds amazing. Sounds great. And it is interesting because at the end of the day, I think it sounds so obvious that as kids, we learn through playing. We learn all of our skills and motor skills. We don't sit down and say, right, this is how you run. This is how you crawl. It's just you do it to get from A to B. And normally it's because there's something at the end which is going to excite you and you do it and you learn it. And then suddenly at some point, as you get older, it turns from, right, you're going to do this now 10 times, 3 times, whilst looking in the mirror at yourself and feeling really self-conscious and be expected to work and wonder why people don't do it. But I think, even though that feels natural, I think the reason why some people find it so difficult, therapists to do this is like it's a void of information. They really don't know where to start. They don't know how to turn something to the game, or maybe they haven't got the confidence. So it sounds like what you're going to be aiding people is going to be really, really useful and helpful. So I'm looking forward to hearing how it develops.
Yes. And I think just touching on the games, when I worked within archery, I really understood the power of, like you said, how people learn through fun games and how much buy-in you can get once you start putting like a challenge on it, maybe a social value of having to communicate, work with other individuals, right? How much that increases the like retention, the buy-in, for example, and then also the execution of the task or the exercise. Because like people generally get into the archery because they don't like more kind of physical high intensity sports, for example, right? Archery is mega inclusive. It's a great sport to be a part of. But one of my challenges as being a strength and conditioning coach within archery was to almost break down some of those barriers and beliefs about S&C and doing the exercises. And that's where the light bulb moment just came on about 3 years ago, where it's like, how about we experiment gamifying a lot of our S&C delivery? And so really started experimenting on the pathway. And it took off massively to the point where we were playing like cones and domes, for example, for like a warm up, or like connect four, right? Or ones where you'd have to run up and throw the hoop onto the target and then run back and then the next person goes a bit of a razor. The buy-in to that was massive because it was hitting so many of those other points in terms of engagement and in terms of fun. And it really took off from there. And I could recommend it to any practitioner about if there's a window of opportunity to try and gamify stuff, because it's going to increase the buy-in, retention and execution of what you're giving to people.
Excellent. I'm not sure whether you've ever been to Serve the Expo at the NEC, normally in November, but we've been there every year, but with the last few years, several years, we've had a stand with people speaking. And there's one speaker, Imi Tester, who was talking all about gamifying and stuff. And she's a wonderful therapist who's a great example of someone who learned traditional skills and then was horrified being told, especially through social media, of how a lot of what she'd learned had been terrible and was about to quit. I don't think she'll mind me saying that. But then fortunately got in contact with the right people who said, whoa, hold on. We're not saying throw everything out, okay? We're just going to tweak things a little bit. You're not doing this with your hands. And she's totally embraced it. And as also she's doing a Feldenkrais course, which really helps because that's all about game motivation and eye contact and visuals. And she did a fantastic presentation. I mean, full credit to her about all about gamifying stuff. So it's really well received. So I think that will be something which will be sought after this year as well, if you're around in November for Therapy Expo. That'd be great. We'll have to get our toes out. But yeah, it's a real massive theme, I think. And it'd be great to hear you've got some courses coming out. Wonderful. Gary has come back to us, as I promised he would. He actually came back about 20 minutes ago. There's no insurance restrictions for working with special populations. However, codes of conduct regarding chaperones, parents, guardians for minors or vulnerable adults. Brilliant. Okay, then. Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I could count on you. Wonderful. Where are we? 10 minutes. I'll make sure that I don't keep my guests longer than I said they would be here. So you mentioned the courses. There's another slide I wanted to bring up from your website. I wasn't sure how many I'll be able to get through. I found this really great. And like I say, people, we're using this on YouTube because people can join us and see them. But if you listen to the podcast, then go to movemojo.com and you'll see all of this information here. I just wanted to bring this one up because I thought it had some great information on it as well. If you listen to the podcast, you can't see it, but it's a big slide which says we aim to create physical activity for life. And it just talks about the participant journey. And like I say, it could be apply to any population at all, but particularly for people with a learning disability who are going to need kind of more one-to-one attention. But I love the way you move from engage to develop to empower. Could you talk us through that kind of journey and why you picked those words?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was almost, we were trying to create something bigger than Move Mojo. Mm-hmm. So with everything that I've done as a practitioner, I've always tried to empower the athletes that I work with, that if I was to go and quit and never come again, they would have enough knowledge and enough skills to be able to carry on being physically active for life. So when I was always programming, I would really coach, but almost coach not just the exercise, but the why, the how behind that, and also give them the confidence. So what I really saw when I joined archery, because it was such a decentralized program where athletes would come on our pathway bi-monthly, so every other month to us, that this empowerment was even more important, being able to give our athletes the tools that when we go away for a couple months can work through the program that I set and feel like they can own it from that stage in terms of if we're not there, they're still working through it. That also helps from a buy-in and a retention and an execution phase. So really, I saw the power of that and really wanted to incorporate that into the Move Mojo program as our endpoint. So when participants leave us or move on from us, so to speak, they've increased certain variables that will manage to keep them physically active for life, right? So that's our endpoint, where people can leave us and feel like they can join a sports club. They feel more confident to do physical activity, or they understand the fun of it, so they can do it at home. So we want to give people those tools to be able to do that. And that's also integrating the bigger care network of parents, teachers, social workers within that frame. So if Move Mojo just stopped existing, or people moved on, developed to a point where they didn't, you know, they wanted to go and do a sport like, let's say, boccia, for example, or archery, then they have that increased confidence and that understanding of fundamental movements to be able to achieve that. With our starting point, it was really that breaking down barriers and engaging them. So with our start point, going into the communities to engage persons who may have not been ever engaged within a physical activity program before. So really that communication, that gamification, that engaging piece is really key there to get people physically active, to increase confidence, to look at certain belief systems around physical activity and see if we can really gain that buy-in to come to our sessions and to engage in group sessions and actually get moving. Then when they actually come to us over the course of 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year, however long we deliver to them for, we look to increase fundamental movements, you know, squat, push, pull, hinge, but through gamification. But most importantly, we look to increase communication, social values, confidence, and then a positive kind of positive view on sport and physical activity. So then it gets to that empowerment stage, which is a third, like that stage, which I talked to you first, which is where they have all those skills, not just physically, but from a social communication confidence point of view, to then engage in some form of physical activity for life. So ultimately what I'm striving for and what we're striving for is something bigger than Move Mojo. And I think it's a really good piece maybe for sports therapists or physios to look at is, can we empower the patient enough that they probably never come back to us with that same injury again? Like, can we empower them that much on exercise, rehab or prehabilitation that we never see them, you know, with that same issue, right? Rather than that kind of reoccur in service for that same thing, for example, can we really educate, empower and develop them so they never come back for that element, you know? So ultimately we want almost that self-sufficiency by the end of it, so to speak.
Great. Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. And because once upon a time, that would have been like, oh, but that's terrible. I need to see each patient 8 times. And if possible, have them coming back forever. And it's like, that was the business model. But I think hopefully, particularly because of COVID and therapists starting to talk more to each other, that we realize now that healthcare can't be based on the same model as, you know, as, yeah, all kicking the time and going, well, that's going to cost you. It just doesn't work with people. You need to work at making that person feel more confident about their body, their ability to do stuff and maybe not come back to see you, but then be prepared that if they do want to come back, you're not going to turn them away, which we were talking about last week. You know, they may well love coming to see you and the journey might go on forever. But yeah, it's a new business model, which people should now be getting on. Otherwise, yeah, your business is going to dry up if you're just working on everybody seeing you 10 times.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's really important for our end goal. Our end goal is to get more people into sport or more people physically active, right? If we can get more people engaged in different varieties of sports, joining a local sports club or, you know, going and doing physical activity at home away from us, like that's our mission. We've got people moving more. So this is really key to what we strive to be able to do. Engage people within some form of physical activity, develop fundamental movement skills, social communication, confidence, and then that leads to an empowered life with physical activity for hopefully the rest of their lives.
And I guess the massive knock-on effect from that, which even helps you even more in your mission, is these people have the confidence to go out and mix with the general community and then show that, yeah, okay, so I've got this learning disability, but I'm still playing football. I'm still here having a beer with you at the day. I'm having a cigarette. I'm getting pissed, you know. Just because I've got a learning disability doesn't mean I'm not human and I can celebrate the good times and I'm going to get grumpy at the bad times, you know. So, and that will help educate society and in turn mean that these people aren't being marginalized and either feared or treated like angels, like, oh, little angels from heaven. Oh, they're so sweet, these people, when really, you know, they're just, that's the last thing they want to hear. So, yeah, so inspiring. Really, really cool. Thank you. Right, it's 8:57. Just to reiterate again, if you want to listen to the podcast and you want to follow or connect with Robert Francis of Move Mojo, then you can go along to the website, which is movemojo.com. You can, whatever your preferred method is, I mean, all the links are on there, but Facebook and LinkedIn, just type in Move Mojo. Instagram is move.mojo. And then Twitter is move_mojo. And obviously, if you listen to the podcast and you've got further questions, then best place is go to YouTube and leave some questions on there. YouTube is the best in terms of shelf life. It'll be there forever and it'll come up in Google searches. So forget Facebook. I'm nothing against, well, it's just Facebook shelf life is dead and Twitter, I don't know what it's for. But YouTube is the place. And I will see these comments and I will forward any questions to either Robert or anybody else who I think can help you. So feel free to keep the conversation going. That's the idea. Right then, we've reached that time once again. Before I forget, next Tuesday, If you are listening to the podcast and want to join us live or people in the live lounge next Tuesday, which will be March the 19th, the topic is going to be talking about business models. It's going to be transforming your healthcare business model with special guest Frank Bendetto of the Honey Badger Project. It's something I've talked about a couple of times in other episodes. It really is this idea of the days of where you could only help your patients or clients face-to-face, one-to-one in healthcare are limited because you're going to burn yourself out. The only way you can make more money is just see more people. So Frank is an expert in suggesting and helping therapists understand how they can be supporting their clients and patients at the same time, even if you're not seeing them. So a hybrid sort of care where you could be maybe helping them through a spreadsheet or some kind of like something you can do in the evening. It's not because otherwise you're burning yourself out. Okay. And this is the reason why a lot of therapists, physios, sports therapists are burning out. And sadly, we're seeing so many people leave the profession because they really think the only way of making money, having a business model, is seeing more people and not earning anything when really that's not what your patients need or what you need. So that's going to be, it's going to be a great episode. And like I say, that'll be recording it live as always next Tuesday, March 19th on either YouTube or Facebook or the Sports Therapy Association Facebook open group. But for tonight, it just leaves me to say once again, thank you very much to Robert Francis of Move Mojo. Thanks for your time, mate. Really appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
And thank you to the people in the live lounge who've joined us as well. You make it all worthwhile because I've always done these things live for the last 10 years. Run Chat Live or Sports Therapy Association. It's lovely to have a chat with people. And the feedback we get is lovely because they just think it flows. In my mind, it's not flowing at all, but the feedback we get is it's just a conversation. We're just chewing the cud, chewing the fat, which is often a nice way to learn as well. So thank you for joining us live. And thank you. If you are listening to the podcast, then as always, please leave a rating and review because it helps the information from our great guests reach more people. Thanks to Google. It's all based on reviews. So please do that. Right. Hopefully see some of you next week. Once again, thanks, Rob Francis. Take care, everybody. See you soon.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.